This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. It's been called gold for nerds, Napster for finance, and heaven for speculators. The media are captivated by it. The Winklevoss twins have invested in it, and criminals have been buying illegal goods with it. But what is Bitcoin? The shorthand is it's a peer-to-peer payment system and a digital currency now being accepted at Overstock.com, a couple of Las Vegas casinos, and at least one NBA franchise. Rob Fleischman, Chief Technology Officer at Zerocoal and our chief explainer of all things techish, joins me now to explain how Bitcoin works, who's using it, who's benefiting from it, and why it may not be the next great thing. Rob, great to have you back with us.
Terrific to be here, Virginia. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the implications of Bitcoin, I just need to understand how it works. Say I want to buy something with Bitcoin. Where do I start?
Okay, well, as you said, Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer payment system and a crypto-based digital currency. So in English, what that means is you need to take your real money, convert it into Bitcoin, and then do a transaction with someone who accepts Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way you do that is you create what's called a Bitcoin wallet. So you find one of the many exchanges for Bitcoin online, register to get a wallet, and a wallet is a pair of cryptographic keys. And in English, there's a private part and a public part. The public part is what you give people who want to send you Bitcoin, and the private part is what you keep that allows you to send Bitcoin to others.
Mm-hmm. So it's like PayPal, except it's this other currency.
Exactly. Now, PayPal is a peer-to-peer payment system, but it is centralized. PayPal runs it, and PayPal runs it in real currencies like dollars and francs and euros, etc., mm-hmm. whereas Bitcoin is decentralized. There are many exchanges, many places where you can create a wallet and send transactions, and the exchanges talk to each other, and the currency they use is Bitcoin.
So it has no sort of central authority. How then is value determined?
Well, so with Bitcoin, you deal with wallets and exchanges. You don't deal with people. So it's anonymous in terms of the giver and receiver. When I do a transaction and you receive it, all you know is my wallet ID, and all I know is your wallet ID. And our transaction doesn't go through a central authority. It can go through any of these exchanges. So a lot of the transaction is anonymous.
Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of people used it on that Silk Road site, for example, where you could buy drugs or arms or pornography.
Illicit transactions it's terrific for. But the other big advantage of it is because there's no central authority, there's low or lower transaction costs. Credit cards, things like PayPal, they're all in the 1% to 3% per transaction. With Bitcoin, because there's a lot of exchanges, there's competition among where you can do transactions. So the transaction costs are very, very low. There's also no government control, so rules about what you can buy and can't buy and who you are, and maybe you're someone that is untrustworthy and can't do bank transactions. But Bitcoin, you could do a transaction.
So I can imagine it really having a lot of appeal for people who, say, for example, mistrust the government and it cuts out the Federal Reserve, for example. They have nothing to do with this. So what I'm hearing from you is, there could be some idealism behind the Bitcoin phenomenon.
I think you're right. But, my problem with Bitcoin, and I'm one of those people who isn't in love with it. I'm not like most of the media outlets that are advertising, oh, this new vendor takes Bitcoin. Isn't that great? I'm actually really pessimistic about it. And I'll tell you why. We talked about the two points of it. Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer anonymous exchange. I think it does that fairly well. But there are other ways to do peer-to-peer currency exchange, some centralized like PayPal and other anonymous ways too. But the problem I have is really with the currency part of it. And the use of Bitcoin as a currency, a lot of problems. So the first one I would say is it has no intrinsic value. In English, there's no one behind it. The dollar, we could talk about all our mistrust in the dollar.
And that there's no gold standard.
But the dollar is still backed by, quote, the full faith and credit of the United States. If you think the full faith and credit of the United States isn't much, well, you shouldn't be in the dollar. But at least it's something. Bitcoin explicitly has nobody backing it. There's no one backing it. If tomorrow Bitcoin disappears, everyone who has Bitcoin goes to zero. There's no one who's going to give you an IOU. No one's going to try and make you whole. The second problem with it as a currency is it is limited to 21 million Bitcoins. That's all there's ever going to be. So with a static amount of Bitcoin out there, there's no way to regulate the amount of currency. There's no way to expand or contract the amount of Bitcoin out there. Some people, of course, might view that as good.
I was thinking a speculator might want to buy up as much Bitcoin as possible, and then they could actually control the value, correct?
They hope that the scarcity causes the value to rise. But remember, we're not talking about speculation now. We're talking about its use as a currency.
Mm-hmm.
So with a currency that can't expand and contract, you get volatility. The currency's value moves a lot. And if a currency's value moves a lot, it's difficult for it to be a store of value. And why that's important. If I do a transaction with you, and many business transactions are settled in 30 days, many mm-hmm. people have 30-day contracts or 60-day contracts. I do a transaction today for something of value X, but 30 or 60 days from now, that value is different. And it might be very different. It might be 10, 15, 20% different because of the volatility of Bitcoin. Without a central authority to monitor and expand and contract the number of Bitcoins on demand, the currency is very volatile. So it makes it hard to use Bitcoin as a store of value for any time. And that is really difficult for business transactions or its use as a currency.
Rob Fleischman is with us. He is our chief explainer of all things techish. And we're talking about how Bitcoin works, who's using it, who's benefiting from it, and his let's say skepticism about it. Despite that skepticism, Rob, I mean, a lot of speculators have been drawn to Bitcoin. The Winklevoss twins. Now, these are the tall, blonde Aryan types who were helped invest in and get Facebook going. Think it's possible. They've invested a bunch of money. Have people seen big payouts from investing in Bitcoin? And what are they hoping for?
Well, I think their bet is on the scarcity. You know, there's a fixed amount of Bitcoin. If Bitcoin takes off and is very valuable, people want to exchange their money into Bitcoin mm-hmm. with a static amount available, 21 million. When you take your dollars, you need to buy Bitcoin. If there aren't very many sellers, the value is going to go up. More buyers than sellers, obviously demand goes up. But there's been bubbles and blow-offs and massive volatility in Bitcoin already. We've seen huge drops and huge spikes. And that's really troublesome. It's very, very difficult for you to put an amount of Bitcoin in your pocket and hope that its value is stable for any length of time. And the other issue that I think is being ignored a lot here is that although everyone's excited that there's decentralized control, that there's no evil bank or country in control of it, we quickly forget how important that is in our daily transactions. Something as simple as going down to your local coffee shop, putting out your credit card and buying a coffee and a pastry is really difficult with Bitcoin. And let me give you the example. You forget that you have a credit card. You got validated by your credit card company. The vendor who takes your credit card has a credit card payment system. They were validated. We have a third-party trust in the banks that gave us those credit cards. And we have a third-party trust in perhaps Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, whoever's doing the transaction. All those things give us validation of to who we're dealing with, what the value was. They also give us reversibility. If there's a problem with something, I mean, I can't tell you how many times people have bought something online or bought something from a vendor, or they have a membership with a gym or someplace that keeps charging them and they dispute the charge. Well, with Bitcoin, there's no way to do that. Once you do the transaction, the money's gone. You don't know who you paid.
All right. Help me understand this then. I'm looking at the Concord Monitor. This is a January article talking about what Bitcoin can buy here in New Hampshire. I already mentioned, you know, Overstock.com is taking it, a couple of Las Vegas casinos. Here in New Hampshire, you can get gas in Twin Mountain. You could have lunch at a cafe in Newmarket. You can take martial arts lessons in Derry and a night stay in Fitzwilliam. And as of this month, clients of Martin and Hipple law offices in Concord can pay their legal bills in Bitcoin. Okay, so help me understand this. What is the advantage for them? And you talked about the Bitcoin wallet. Yes, I can buy Bitcoin and pay for something with Bitcoin, but then I have to pay my telephone bill. Can you convert Bitcoin back into dollars?
You certainly can. The advantage for people taking Bitcoin is that the transaction fee is low. So me as a vendor, instead of paying 2% off to Visa or MasterCard, American Express, I can pay 0.1% or 0.01% to an exchange. So that's more money in my pocket. So I certainly see the advantage of accepting it. But I think the real advantage today is that Bitcoin's getting a lot of media attention. And by saying that I accept it, I'm getting some free media attention like you just very generously gave to all
to those all
vendors,
those
Virginia. I'm sure they really appreciate it. But beyond that, for the consumer, for someone who's actually buying services, I'm really wary. I am very, very wary about using Bitcoin. I think that the only transactions that it's really suitable for are the ones where the risk of revealing who you are or who your vendor is are more than the risk of losing your money with Bitcoin.
All right. So failed experiment, perhaps in this case. But could a peer-to-peer digital currency work under other circumstances? And even not digital. I'm thinking about, you know, the downtown dollars that they use in some towns to buy local, or the Berkshire dollars that they use in the western Massachusetts region.
I think the great lesson for Bitcoin for us is that there's value in a peer-to-peer digital currency that's inexpensive. I think that there's a lot of pressure being put on people like the PayPals and the credit card companies to say, hey, we can use something else to move money between people that's very inexpensive and decentralized. I think that part of it is interesting and potentially revolutionary. But where my gut says this is dangerous is where we start talking about a currency, where we start talking about holding value in something other than dollars or pesos or francs or euros. But the idea of a digital exchange, I think that is really an interesting idea and will probably put pressure on the existing players in transaction systems.
All right, Rob, if we find out that you are buying lots of Bitcoin and just trying to dissuade everybody else, it's going to be a problem.
I agree. It'll definitely be a problem.
Thank you for demystifying Bitcoin for us today.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure to be here, Virginia.
Rob Fleischman, he's Chief Technology Officer at ZeroCoal and our chief explainer of all things Wired. You can learn much more about Bitcoin and see a video of how it works on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.